Lately, one of the most common questions I get is, do you really love the Bare Face skincare that you talk and you post about? Well, the answer is yes. I've been consistently using a routine that a Bare Face skincare specialist selected for me during my free consultation, and my skin is glowing. The texture has improved, and I love how simple the routine is. Just from following Bare Face founder, nurse practitioner Jordan Harper on Instagram, I've learned so much about my skin and what it needs to look healthier. You too can text one of Jordan's skincare specialist for a complimentary consult and get started on the routine that is best for your skin type. They have a couple of new products that I think you'll be excited to try too, including the Everyday Hero reusable eye patches. We love that Bare Face Girls are big fans of the podcast, so they have offered Got It From My Mama listeners 15% off their first purchase by using the code MAMA15 at checkout. My oldest son, Cooper, introduced me to a band called Drew Holcomb and the Neighbors when he was in middle school. And I just remember being mesmerized by Ellie, Drew's wife, who was with the band at the time. She just exuded joy in every note from the stage. Since then, I've had the opportunity to interview Ellie many times in my job as an entertainment reporter. And let me just tell you that she is special. Her mom, Debbie, shines that same bright light. And in this interview, she's as real as they get, offering advice about motherhood and marriage in a way that I don't even think she realized just how much wisdom she was sharing. You are in for a treat with my interview with Debbie Bannister. Okay, Debbie, you've raised the biggest ray of sunshine in Ellie Holcomb. Oh my goodness, I love that girl.
Thank you. I do too.
We were just talking and you said she just came out awesome.
She did. She really did.
She is so kind and sweet beyond just being talented and has a voice to me that is so unique. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's that little bit of rasp in it or mm-hmm. what, but I found her background so interesting in that she grew up in this incredibly musical family, but she wasn't necessarily like, oh, that's what I'm going to do
exactly.
when I grew
that's
up.
That's true.
Does it surprise you a little bit as well that this is the path that she has taken?
It does. It does. She has always been a singer. And so I think when she got in high school, I started to realize she's actually writing songs. Like she came home from youth camp one time and she was singing a scripture. And I was like, is that a new song from Smitty? And she was like, no, I wrote it on the youth camp. And I was like, what?
You wrote
that
it?
That is so amazing.
Yeah.
And I think that that's how she processes truth. Mm-hmm. She's just a very creative person.
Yeah. Well, sometimes she'll even just come on her social media and sing scripture.
Yes, definitely.
Which I think is so, you can tell she uses it as almost this healing process.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's that, like I said, it's just how she processes truth and grapples with it.
Yeah.
And it has been a blessing to us. I was so sad when she got married. You know, for some reasons, because she was gone and we were all like, bummer.
Yeah.
And we were sad when she left for college, but we felt like that about all our kids.
Right. But when there's that personality in your home, I remember being really hard for me when my first one left the house because he was the energy in our family. You know, he's in the room now. So,
yeah, I keep looking at him. I can see I would be sad if he left.
Cooper, who helps me with the podcast, but he was like the energy and the laughter and the comedy. And the, you know, like just a lot. If Cooper was home, you knew it, you know? And so that was especially hard for me when he left. So I totally get that for sure. So we're going to talk a lot about Ellie, but I want to go back to you because you have such a fascinating story as well. You grew up in Nashville, right?
I did.
Okay. So local girl, which as people that are listening from all over the place, they may not realize, but we call them unicorns because there's so many people in Nashville that aren't from
here.
Yeah.
It's really crazy.
And you went to Harpeth Hall High School?
I did.
Private all-girls school. Mm-hmm. And you made a friend there that a lot of our listeners have heard of. Tell me about that connection to Amy Grant.
Yes. Actually, I met her in grammar school.
Oh.
She came to Innsworth in sixth grade. And she came in just like a breath of fresh air. I mean, she was so comfortable in her skin. And everybody was pretty fascinated with her.
Even at that age in grammar school?
Well, I mean, you know, I don't mean to overstate it, but yeah, she was just like herself, you know?
Which she still is
and
today.
And she's so real and a little bit self-deprecating and just so kind. And she really did make an impression on me, but I wasn't in a lot of classes with her. Mm-hmm. And so I did get to know her better at Harpeth Hall.
Okay. So in Harpeth Hall, you guys, that's high school, you guys became closer friends, I guess.
Yeah. That's right.
And then what was the connection to maybe church or Sunday school?
Well, actually what happened is at Harpeth Hall, Amy's older sister had a friend who was tragically killed in a motorcycle accident. Mm. And Amy was going through a spiritual kind of renewal. I mean, it was a Jesus movement. And she was just so, so intimate with God and so filled with just his great love. And she had just like this incredible passion for who he was and who he could be in people's lives. And
as a high schooler.
Wow. Yes. I think that losing a friend and this thinking about I want to share what I have with other people. Mm-hmm. And in grammar school, we were in a glee club together. And so she decided she wanted to have an assembly at Harpeth Hall, and she wanted somebody to sing with her. And she had written some songs for her great-grandmother. And I was just a little bit in awe of her because I saw most of, you know, myself and my friends just acting like high schoolers, you know, a little gossip, a little, you know, and I would just watch her, and she would not do those kind of things that I,
typical,
you know,
teenager, right, high school attitude. Right. Yeah.
And so when she asked me if I would do it, I was like, absolutely. I was like, just wanted to spend more time with her.
Yeah. And you were musical as well, right?
Well, I sang, okay, you know, okay, and I enjoyed that. But she came to our house to practice one time. This really changed my entire family's life. And we were practicing, and she had gone on a church retreat. And my mom, who's a very elegant person, and she was just kind of sitting in there, do you mind if I sit with you? And we were like, no, it's fine. And she said, so you went on your youth retreat. How was that? And Amy goes, oh, it was amazing. She goes, used to be usually we would just sneak off and get and make out, you know. I was like, okay.
You're saying that to my mom, okay.
Yeah. But she said, but I don't know, I just feel like something amazing is happening. And she said there was a girl in our group who started smoking when she was really young, and she couldn't quit. And so our youthful pastor said, hey, everybody just come gather around her and put your hand on her, and we're going to pray for her. And Amy said, I put my hand on her, and it just felt like something was happening. It was just amazing. And she said, and she never picked up another cigarette. And we were like, wow. And so my mom reached down and picked up her purse and got a pack of cigarettes out. First, Amy looked at my mom because my mom smoked, and she goes, I mean, there's nothing wrong with smoking. She just wanted to quit. And my mom was like, oh, I know. And then my mom got her cigarettes out of the purse and started to light a cigarette up. And I was like, okay. And so all of a sudden my mom started like coughing and choking, and like, I go, Mom, you don't have to do that. She told you there, she's not being judgy of you. And Mom goes, do you not smell that? And I was like, what? And she said, that's the most noxious fume I've ever smelled. And she was like opening the door and everything. And we were like, wow, because we didn't smell anything weird. My mom never picked up another cigarette.
After that day with
Amy? After that day.
Wow.
It was such a God thing. And Amy was so loving the church, Belmont Church, where she was going. Uh-huh. And so my parents went to church there, and they came back and they go, it was better than a movie. So much love there. And it was all different kinds of people. And it was the Jesus movement. It was a beautiful, beautiful thing to be part of.
So she really had something to do even with the spiritual perspective of your family being back involved in church. And
yes, like we grew up going to church, but I don't think there was a real connect with the person of God, just the intimacy and just amazing love that he has for each person,
right,
in such sweet and powerful ways. And so I think that everybody is hungry for that. And for me, having had a middle school experience that was a little bit like it made me a little jaded, and I was just looking for something that was real and sturdy and meaningful. And so when I gave my life to Jesus, it was like my life was flatline. It was like, it was all there is to do is just find a great dress for prom and hopefully, you know, it was just felt so empty to me. And then all of a sudden I was like, everything went from flatline black and white to full color 3D,
like a passion
everything
for the Lord.
Had meaning. Yeah. It was wow. So sweet. It was so sweet for me and for my family.
Yeah, that's really awesome. And to think that's part of that testimony of your entire family is really, really
absolutely
awesome. So tell me about how you met Brown Bannister. And let me give a little, I'm going to brag on him a little bit. But if you're not as familiar with the Christian music industry, this is one of the greatest all-time producers, period. And yes, his name has become synonymous with Amy Grant. So you've got to tell
absolutely.
Me how you made that connection
right.
of the two of them. I mean, multiple Grammy Awards, Dove Awards, all of the things.
Mm-hmm.
So you have been around the music business for sure.
I certainly have. And it was so much fun watching Amy. When she wrote those songs, she played them for Brown, and he was her youth pastor. And so he told a friend of his, Chris Christian, and they had done some work together before just starting, and Brown had engineered for him. And he said, I mean, I think these songs are really good. And
was he a producer at the time?
No, Brown was an engineer, and Chris was producing.
Chris was. Okay, yes. Got it.
And he had a production deal with Word Records. And so Brown said, you should listen to it. And so Chris heard it, and he played it over the phone for Stan Mosier in Texas. And Stan goes, she's great. Sign her up. And so then Chris said, oh, you should produce her.
Was she in college at this point or still
no,
high school?
No, she was in high school.
Oh, this is still while you
yes,
guys are high school friends
yes.
at Harpeth Hall.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
And so he signed her to a record deal. And then Chris said, Brown, you produce it. And he's like, I don't know how to produce it. He goes, you didn't know how to engineer and you just did a great song. So, I mean, you just did a great project.
Yeah.
And so he ended up working with her.
That was
her.
His very first project.
Right.
So tell me about being married to Brown Bannister. He, as a music producer, was gone a lot, right?
Yes.
And what we haven't said is that you have 5 children, not
right.
just Ellie.
That's right.
Yes. So tell me about some of those days
yeah.
of what that was like as a mom.
He just took to production so well, and he thrived in it. And I think that one reason he's done well with it is he doesn't have a style. He doesn't program or produce music for projects. He listens to the artist and he tries to help them fulfill what vision they have for their projects. And so he just loved it and he did really well. And I was all about that. That was fine with me, but it got intense. Like it got long hours pretty quickly. And so that became problematic, especially after we had kids.
Mm-hmm.
Like he was gone a lot.
And your first two came 13 months apart, right?
Right. And so what happened was we kind of hit a crisis point because, I mean, I remember going to my dad going, look, I just don't know what to do because it's just a lot. It's like too much, but he's successful and he's enjoying it. But I don't know what to do. And he said, well, just don't complain, you know, don't make home a nice place to be and he'll come home. And that I did that pretty well, I think, but he still didn't.
You're still gone a lot.
So then I got really angry. So 7 years in, I found myself at a marriage counselor's office, you know.
Did he go with you?
No, he was out of town working on a project.
Of course he was.
And we were going to go together, but I was just, at this point, I was super angry. I wasn't handling it very well.
Kind of developed a little bit of a bitterness to.
Yes. Well, yeah. I just felt very frustrated. And because I'm crazy about him and we got along great.
Yeah.
But I just saw it, how it was taking away from the kids. And,
right. And they were feeling it too, right?
Was too much.
Yeah.
But because I was making home a nice place to be, I was stuffing a lot of the anger.
Yeah.
And so when it came out, he was just like, whoa, you're cussing. And I was like, I am. And
this
I said,
is the point I'm
but
at.
But you're neglecting us and that's not cool. You know, I didn't say it that nicely, actually. So when we went to the marriage counselor, I was like, well, this is finally things are going to straighten out because obviously it's all his fault, you know.
Of course
and
it
so
is.
She looked at me at one point and she said, you know, you're a very cute, demanding person. And that took me aback. I was like, wait a minute. I don't see myself as demanding, but I just think that the anger about this issue especially was so strong that it was hard for me to be calm about it mm-hmm. when it came up. And so that was really helpful for me to recognize that I had things to work on. And she also said, you know, what happens when you feel neglected? And she goes, what, how do you feel? And I go, pissed off. Yeah. And I was like, and she was like, yeah, but before that, how do you feel? I was like, mad as hell. I mean, I was so angry. And she was like, no, you feel sad. I was like, yeah, I guess. Yeah. And she goes, the anger is a defense mechanism because you're already feeling vulnerable and now you're mad. And he can't even see you because you're coming at him with samurai swords.
So he's not even seeing this, the layer of sadness. He doesn't see. He's just getting angry.
Yeah. I never talked about the sadness. I was like, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And so she said, I really want to encourage you to just show him that you're sad because I think he's going to care about that. Mm-hmm. And it seemed obvious to me, you know, that
he should know, right?
Right. That's how you felt. He should know that mm-hmm. when you're not home very much, hardly ever,
yeah.
then you're – family's going to be missing out.
Did you guys find a compromise in there somewhere?
Absolutely. We did. And it was actually, she said, if you will risk being vulnerable, I think things will change. And it took longer than I wanted it to. But she said, you have a chance to have a once in a lifetime marriage. Mm. And I really feel like we do. I think that we're so close.
That's amazing.
Because we just hit that crisis point. And I had to get to a point where I was like very honest and vulnerable. And he had to change some ways that he was spending his time. And
right.
I think it's hard. Nobody really feels like a hero much at home with young kids.
It's so true. I read that yesterday. No one gets an award for getting their kids to practice on time.
Right.
There's not a lot of right. recognition in motherhood sometimes.
Exactly. And so I think that, you know, if you're choosing between being in the studio with amazing creative people and then going home and like, I mean, I love kids, so I would have the whole neighborhood in our house, you know? And Brown's like, it feels like a daycare. Like, where are our kids? Like, it was kind of crazy. And so I think we just had to wade through all of those things and figure it out.
What is your biggest piece of marriage advice after going through those valleys in your yeah. own marriage and now to be able to sit here and say, our marriage is awesome. We grew so much through that time.
Yeah. I would say, like for me, it was more than just talking to him and going through the counseling. It became a spiritual issue for me. Mm. And so when I went to our pastor about it, he said, what you're describing to me is fear. You're afraid you're losing your husband. And he said, and when you have fear, you have to fight it sometimes. It's like a stronghold. And he said, the way I would describe it is like somebody's knocking on the door and they have this interesting package and you open the package and these little green men come out and they beat you to a pulp. And he said, the first time you open it, it's like, you know, understandable because you didn't know what was in there. But he said, you keep letting that fear come and just pummel your heart. Mm. And he said, you just have to get to a place where like you're going to be okay no matter what. And he said, what's the worst thing that could happen? And I was like, that we grow further, further apart and, you know, Brown ends up leaving me. And he said, okay, so if that happens, and I was like, what? But he said, if that happens, I have two questions to ask you. Would God still love you? And he said, I know the answer to that, but would you still love God? Mm. And he said, when you can answer yes to that, then no matter what happens, you're going to be okay. And it was a strange but really effective way for me to deal with that fear. And he also said, you can find some scripture. And you know, when you're reading in the Word, you can find scripture that speaks to your heart. And sometimes you just have to fight for it, you know? And so I would do that. I would just, he goes, just march around the house and like, you know? And so it just got to this wonderful place of wholeness for me where I wasn't looking for my identity or my feeling of, you know, being whole by the person I was married to.
Right.
Even though I really did love him and care for him, I kind of got to this place where I was like, okay, which was very transformative for our marriage and for me.
Did it improve you as a mom?
That's a great, yes. I would, I would hope so. I would think so, because you're not so focused on what's not going right. Mm. And you're more present. You're there, and you're there for them. And you're not angry at, you know, their dad. You're just like, you know, you're speaking honestly, you're speaking vulnerably, and things got so much better.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I guess that anytime a healthy marriage is going to help to create a healthy family. So I'm sure that that's the results that you saw as well.
I think that's one of the greatest gifts you can give your kids.
Oh, absolutely.
To have a healthy marriage.
Yeah. And for you to be able that to be part of your testimony, to share that kind of the end result of working hard and fighting for and being willing to change and mold, you know, both of you. And then now you're able in these years with an empty nest and six grandchildren and all the things to really enjoy each other and the relationship that you have now.
I feel super grateful. And the kids say a lot of times, y'all were not perfect, but you always told us that you knew you weren't. And you told us that, you know that you make mistakes. And we used to say, look, y'all are probably going to need counseling. If we can help pay for it, we will. But it's just part of the journey of life. It's a, you know, we live in a broken world. So we just have to find our ways through.
One of the things that I've heard Ellie say was she talked pretty openly and vulnerably about her dad being gone a lot, and that music was what took him away from the family, which relates to what you and I are talking about right now, but that was kind of part of her reason for really not being very interested in music. Tell me a little bit more about those discussions you've had with her and how that kind of almost steered her another direction.
Right. I think that she didn't talk to us a lot about her sadness, but I think that neither of us were enthralled with the life. I mean, just watching Amy, you know, who never pursued a career in music, you know, it just happened to her. And, you know, making hard choices about, okay, I'm going on the road and I have these kids. And she's just always been so beautifully vulnerable and honest about, you know, what it is that things cost her. Yeah. And I think that, so we didn't really encourage, even though you see giftedness in your kids, we were like, being an artist is really a hard life for if you want a family. And so I think that we did not really encourage her that much, but it's irresistible to her because it's such a vehicle. It's like she came home from the Bible camp, I mean, from church camp, you know, singing that scripture that she wrote the music to. It's just so much part of who she is.
Right.
I think that it was just meant to happen.
It was just in her. Right. Yeah. So when she decided to go to school after high school, she went to the University of Tennessee and she wanted to be a teacher. Is that right?
That's right. She didn't know at first exactly what she wanted to do.
Okay.
And she's got a bunch of really just kind of firstborn type A friends. And they were like, okay, I know my schedule and we're going to meet for lunch here. And then I'm taking this class. And Ellie was like, I don't know what I want to do. I said, that's really actually normal. Your friends are exceptional.
Right, right. So,
but she did want to teach, and she did teach for a little while, but
did she get her master's?
She did.
Wow.
I know.
So she must have really loved it.
She did.
Yeah. What she talks about some of the first times she remembers. You remember the church camp, but then she would write in the dorm stairwell.
Yes.
Maybe to write songs that might help her girlfriends who were dealing with some heartbreak or that type of thing. Right. What do you remember about those early days?
Well, I think that like when she was learning to play guitar, this is her personality. Like she would be practicing and she would sing the songs and she was like perform sing the songs. And I was like, you know, that sounds so great, but you don't have to like you. A lot of people, when they're practicing, they play quietly and they sing quietly. And she goes, I don't know how to do that. Like if you feel a song, you just have to sing it.
And that doesn't surprise me a bit.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
And so she, you know, Brown says, you know, most people do scratch vocals when they're starting to track.
Right.
And he goes, so many times with Ellie, I could keep her vocal because she was performing it.
She gives it all she's got the first time.
Yeah. So I think that's so great about her.
Yeah, so in her. So what do you remember about the very first time she mentioned a guy named Drew at UT?
Which happened quickly.
It did?
Her type A friends were, they were competing for scholarships. And so,
what types of scholarships?
Like
academic or?
Yeah, academic, okay. But also like leadership.
Oh, and, okay, okay.
And so Drew was as well. And they met him and so they just thought he was great.
At UT on
at
campus.
At UT on
okay.
campus.
Okay.
He got the top scholarship, the Peyton Manning scholarship.
Oh, he did?
Which includes like a year of study abroad.
Oh, yeah, it's a big one. Yeah. I went to UT as well. So okay, I'm very familiar with that. Yes. So, and I should probably back up and say we are talking about Drew Holcomb of Drew Holcomb and the Neighbors.
Yes.
For our music fans who are listening, that is Ellie's husband. And I was just so curious to hear about kind of how they met and all of that. So
right.
That's interesting. Through the scholarship program is how she met him while they were applying?
Well, her friends met him. She got an honor scholarship, but she didn't have to try out for that.
Okay.
But her friends, the type A friends, were competing with him
gotcha.
for the other scholarships. And so she met him through her friends.
Okay.
And they got along really well, and he invited her to a weekend away with the fraternity, and they had a blast. And so she came back, though, and she had had a very close relationship in high school, which had just kind of ended abruptly.
Still fresh.
And I think that was part of what was happening in her heart.
Mm-hmm.
But she also recognized that he was a really different kind of person than the people that she normally dated. He's just like full of boldness and self-confidence, and he says things, you know, sometimes very bluntly.
Yeah.
And so I think she just determined that they maybe weren't a good fit, but she really, really enjoyed being with him and respected him. And so when he kept asking, he asked her out. She goes, I don't really want to date you, but we can be friends. And she put him in the friend zone. And so I heard about that, and I thought, well, that's cool. And she goes, Mom, Drew came up to me and he was upset with me because he said, I keep asking you to do things as a friend and you're just like, you're just kind of skirting around. And he goes, I just need to know, did you mean that you want to be friends? And I think that really impressed her that he would just be that forthright.
Yeah. And was willing to have that level of it.
Exactly.
If that's what she was willing to give, then okay, we'll be friends. Yeah.
So they became friends. And so when I knew that he was the one was like, I think her junior year, and this guy wanted to date her, and she was undecided because she'd been in another relationship that didn't end very nicely.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, well, he seems like a nice guy. Why won't you date him? She said, because then I won't be able to hang out with Drew again because the guys that I date don't like me being friends with them. And I would hate that. And she was like crying. And I was like,
maybe you need to reevaluate
right.
this.
I said, that's interesting that you feel that way. You need to think about that. And so I think that she started to recognize, I think that honestly, he changed a little bit. He's still very much himself.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that he just pursuing her in a real friendship, she grew to respect him immensely.
Yeah. So and they were friends for how long before?
They were friends all through college. And he was graduating, I think, when she finally realized that she wanted to date him.
Oh, wow.
So it went very quickly
okay.
after that.
After that, uh-huh. once they decided, right. okay, this is actually going right. to be a relationship then.
Exactly.
Okay, do you remember meeting him for the first time? Did she bring him home or was it something
yes,
in Knoxville?
He came to our house.
Okay.
And he was so fun. Like he wrestled with our son, Will, and he was very like, I thought it was very refreshing. He wasn't like kind of like wowed by who Brown was or, you know, he was just, he's comfortable in his own skin.
Yeah.
And sometimes that can feel intimidating, but I knew so much about him and his parents, you know, I've been praying for Nancy. She had some health issues and Ellie came to me weeping over her health. I mean, she really had some big scares. So
oh, wow.
I just, I really felt this like connection with him. I think they took Carly to the rope swing over the river and Carly climbed up there and she got
she would have been young, right?
Yeah, she was young. And Drew was really patient with her about that, but honest and funny.
Yeah.
And so that was a nice kind of window into the kind of person that he was.
Was Drew pursuing music?
That was so weird because Ellie had done music for a while, but when he went to Scotland to school, he had a lot of downtime and he wrote a lot of songs in Scotland.
So that's kind of when that started right. picking up for him.
So when he came back, he decided, this is so Drew, and it's such a Holcomb thing. They're just like, people matter. And so he wanted to travel around and play his songs that he wrote for his friends. And so he wanted to record it. And he went into the studio and recorded it. And the guy who owned the studio knew his dad. And he said, I hate to tell you this, but he's actually kind of good.
If you love good music and good podcasts, you'll love Roots Music Rambler. I'm Jason Falls. My co-host Francesca Folinazzo and I talk to the singers, songwriters, musicians, and more in Americana, alt-country, bluegrass, folk, blues, and beyond. We share our own takes on the latest news in the space and recommend new music for you to explore every episode. Come get to the roots of the music you love. Find us at RootsMusicRambler.com or go wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to Roots Music Rambler.
Oh, how funny. Did that have anything to do with Brown? Or he just did that on his own?
He did nothing. That on
okay,
his own.
Got it.
And so then he started playing and asked Ellie to sing background for him. And a part of me was like, wait a minute, she's the singer, you know? So it was weird for me. It took me a while to recognize him as this is something that he's good at and that he wants to do, because that was not anything I had ever thought about in connection to him.
Do you remember what he was studying in school? What were his
history.
Plans? Oh, history.
He's
okay.
a history major.
Okay.
Which I love.
Yeah.
I mean, that's so cool.
Yeah, very much so.
He's
interesting. He is so interesting. Yeah, and it doesn't surprise me when you say that that's what he was studying.
Right.
There just seems to be this kind of depth to him that
absolutely
I think is so fascinating. Yeah. Tucker and I have a product that we are so excited to tell you about. Coat Defense has been a game changer in trying to keep Tucker smelling good and looking handsome, even though he loves to roam all over our property and get dirty. Coat Defense is a daily preventative powder that reduces the number of baths I have to give Tucker. Do you know how hard it is to wash an 80-pound golden retriever? It also eliminates the bacteria that can cause odor in the first place. And unlike a typical deodorant or spray, Coat Defense is healthier. It doesn't mask the odor, it eliminates it. So there's less scratching, paw licking, and head shaking, and a whole lot more cuddle time with mom because he just stays so much fresher. Tucker's friends at Coat Defense are offering you 15% off to try the daily preventative powder or any of the other awesome products they offer for your pet's health. Just use code MAMA15 at checkout. If you're not using the Core 4 products for long-term skin health, you're likely very underwhelmed by the results of your skincare routine. Think of building your skincare routine like building a house. You need a solid foundation, otherwise your house will collapse. The same thing applies to your skin. If you're not using the Core 4, your skin lacks the resources to be healthy. So what are the Core 4 products? A vitamin C, SPF, an exfoliant, and a retinoid. These four products protect, repair, and strengthen the skin, and they are the first four products that are really worth investing in because they are the powerhouse of your routine. Barefaced makes it easy to get started with these four essentials with their Bare Necessities Bundle. This bundle can be customized to your skin type when you take the 5-minute skin quiz on barefaced.com. They even break down exactly how to use each product and how to introduce them into your routine. Super simple and effective. Hey, got it from my mama listeners. Get a discount code. Use MAMA15 to get 15% off your first barefaced purchase. Okay. So the music thing for Drew kind of came as a surprise to you guys.
Yes.
Then.
And so we were like, okay, that's cool. And
what did you think about their sound together?
I thought it was great. I remember just thinking, I'm not used to seeing her as a background singer, kind of, or, you know.
Because what was she doing at the time? More like church camps and stuff? I know she did a lot with Young Life.
Yeah.
Okay.
She did. And that's a funny story. A Young Life leader came to our house because he wanted to talk to her about producing some of her scripture songs.
Oh.
And she was so excited. And we were like, that's so cool. I mean, we could see why, you know. Mm-hmm. And the guy was like, met Brown, and he was like, I am so embarrassed. And she was like, why? And he goes, your dad is a Christian record producer. I feel so stupid asking you to produce you. And she, you know, he left without talking to her about it or anything. And she was super disappointed. And we were like, that's so weird. And she goes, I mean, I told him my dad never said he wanted to produce me. And Brown was like, Well, I didn't really know you wanted to be produced, you know, and so that was kind of like this interesting turn for her.
Like a gap between no one else thinking that they should because of her dad, but then her dad not thinking he should because he is her dad.
Right. Yeah. I think that he didn't want to push her, you know.
Yeah.
But it became apparent that she really wanted to do it.
Did he do that first album? I know he did Red Sea Road. Okay.
Yeah, they did the scripture record.
Right. Okay. Okay. That's really neat. What was that like seeing them work together?
So sweet. And then when she had Emmylou, I got to have Emmylou. And it was so
she was
awesome.
So busy, right? So
right. Well, she would, that was when we had the studio in the house.
Oh, okay.
So she would bring Emmylou with her.
Yeah.
And those were such sweet days.
Oh, I can only imagine.
And when we lived there, I used to cook for the people, the clients that round out in the studio.
Oh, nice.
So how fun was that? Like, yeah. That was so wonderful. Like, it felt like family.
Yeah. Is that kind of a tradition of these people who've come through your home in the years to record? And
well, when we built the studio at the house, I was talking Brown into moving away from Brentwood out to Franklin. It was West Haven.
Oh, yeah.
And he goes, there's no place to eat out here. And so I was like, well, I'll cook for the artist until some restaurants pop up, because I know they will. And so that kind of like happenstantially, you know, became a part of the culture of that studio. And
oh,
that
people were probably lining up then for Debbie was going to cook for them.
They were appreciative. I think, you know, that's one the hard thing. You're in the studio all the time and then you just get junk food a lot of times.
Yeah.
And so it felt like family time.
Oh, yeah. Really I can sweet. Only imagine.
But when it was family, that was even extra wonderful.
Yeah. So I want to go through the kids because we mentioned you're a mom of five. Ellie's the oldest.
Right.
And then under her, just 13 months later, you had Ben.
Right.
And Ben's actually a songwriter as well.
That's correct.
Yeah.
He is. He's really good.
And he works with church music, worship music, and he's in Knoxville.
That's right.
And then John is the next?
John is the next.
Okay.
And he is a guitar player, secret songwriter. He's written some amazing music.
And then next is Will?
Is Will.
Okay.
And he never, of all the kids, he did the singing the least.
Okay.
But he's a great singer. And he would be a great country artist, I think. It's not anything that he would ever. He's like 6'3", he's an athlete.
Yeah.
And so he was more interested in sports than music.
And then Carly, who definitely is in music and has her own projects out.
Shocked us.
Like, really?
Yeah. We wrote a song for John when he had to be away for Christmas one year. And so we split up the parts.
Meaning the family members did?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And we split up the parts, and Carly had this part, and we were all like, what in the world?
Like, where did this come from?
Amazing. And then she's very introverted and super sensitive. So she started writing songs, and they were like so good.
Wow.
We couldn't believe it. It's hard for her to perform because she's super sensitive and it's personal.
Wow.
But it's so, I think
she's so talented. Yeah, so good.
And Ellie's such a great big sister.
I was going to say, do you feel like Ellie really impacted Carly in her desire to want to write, or just?
I think just seeing it play out is just, it is natural. But I don't know that Carly ever really wanted to be a singer-songwriter. I think it just happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's been really sweet for them to kind of walk through that together. It's been...
When Drew and Ellie were first starting to go on the road and getting lots of tour dates, I know they've toured really heavily before the kids, once it became, I guess, Drew Holcomb and the Neighbors.
Right.
Did you have some hesitancies about that lifestyle for Ellie and, like, knowing she would want a family and all what road, you know what road life can bring. So were you at all kind of wondering how would she juggle all of that?
I am a big Drew Holcomb fan. I mean, more than just how he... you know, sings and communicates, but he is so smart and his parents are amazing and they were very supportive of him. And he came up with a plan. It's insane. He came up with a plan to get backers, some investors who would invest in him as a singer-songwriter. And they would like temporarily, like it was kind of like a loan, own some of his music.
Uh-huh.
But and if he couldn't pay him back, they would they would collect royalties. I'm probably messing this whole thing up, but I think it's genius.
Yeah.
And his dad is an investment. And so, you know, I'm sure they collaborated on this
plan. They kind of figured out a way to combine like a business plan,
right,
like with the artistic endeavor. Wow.
Right.
That's so interesting.
It was amazing.
Maybe before GoFundMe was cool, it was very similar.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly it.
So then that's kind of how all of the ball got rolling for that. And then they traveled for a long time.
Because she did teach school for a year at East Lit and she loved it, but they didn't see each other very much. I think that he just wanted a way to feel secure financially to ask her to be, you know, leaving that job that she got her master's for.
Right, right.
And so that's what he figured out. And it went swimmingly. It went really well.
That's awesome.
But she had a great year at East that 1 year.
That just taught the 1 year?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure she's so proud of that degree and knows if she ever wanted to that, you know, she could probably do that again.
Sure.
And then at some point, she did make the decision to come off the road and be home with. Was it when Emmylou was born or?
No.
She's traveled with Emmylou a lot, didn't she?
Yeah, Emmylou went to almost every state in the country before she turned a year old.
Wow.
Like, I remember after she was born, they prayed over her infant seat, the car seat. Just let her love the seat. And she got so she would hardly fall asleep if she wasn't in her car seat.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
I mean, they were on the road.
Yeah.
They did the Christmas show right after she was born.
That's one of my favorite things. We go every year. We love their Christmas show.
Oh,
yes.
I'm so glad you like it.
Yeah.
I do, too.
Yeah, it's fabulous. It's so, so good. You talking about how she would pray over the car seat and then that her Emmylou did love the car seat. We have to go back to the story, though, of her literally praying Carly, her little baby sister, to be.
Yes, absolutely.
So Ellie was the oldest, with three younger brothers, but she desperately wanted a sister.
She did. And she enjoyed her brothers. And she said, it's okay if it's a boy, but I really, really, really would like a little sister. And this
But you really, really were not planning to have a fifth child, right?
Mm-mm, we weren't. And it was so funny because one night we went on a date, Brown and I went on a date, and we got back and our room was like perfectly clean. Our shoes were all lined up in the closet. There was a doily with a tea bag on it. And she was like, please, 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 I want a little sister.
She wrote it on the, my goodness.
And I guess she was preparing the love nest or something. We were so
setting the scene for the room. Wow. Oh, my goodness.
Isn't
that's
that
a great
so
story.
Adorable? It was.
You couldn't tell her no.
It's just really cool because we were very surprised.
Yeah. How old was Will at the time, your youngest?
He was four when she was
He was four.
Was born.
Okay. And you kind of thought you were done.
The room when I had Carly.
Oh, she was? Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. What's the age difference of
then
Ellie and Carly?
She said she wanted to adopt because it wasn't that easy.
She's like, I'm not doing that.
Right.
Oh, that's funny. What's the age difference of Carly and Ellie?
10 years.
Oh, 10 mm-hmm. years. Okay. So she was kind of a little mother to her,
yes,
wasn't she?
She really was.
Yeah.
She was for all of us.
What did you think when Ellie finally, and I know that the fans and people had asked for this for so long, but when she finally decided to make her own solo project? Because like you said, when she started with Drew, you thought, Ellie's the singer. Like, Ellie needs to do this.
Yeah, that was weird to me. I credit Drew for that, too, because they would have band meetings where everybody would submit a song. And all of Ellie's songs were Christian, very, very clearly Christian.
Right.
And Drew, although he is a Christian, it wasn't his goal to sing Christian music.
Right.
And so finally he goes, you're fired. You're fired from the band. And she was like, what do you mean? He goes, you need to do your own thing. You need to do Christian music.
Really?
That's what you need to pursue. These songs are too good.
Wow.
And I think that Drew and Ellie are such a good combination because he is honest and he is, you know, he's honest about things that are hard. And Ellie tends to be just like, oh, it's all so good, you know. And I think that he really challenged her faith. In the sense of, it's not all so good for everybody. You know, things are hard. And what are you going to say to that person? So I think that helped sharpen her songwriting.
Caused her to go maybe a little deeper into maybe hurt and pain that people, because she is a sunny side up person.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, for sure. I bet she gets that from you. Do you think?
Yes.
Maybe that
when you said, I've seen some of your other podcasts, and you said, what did she get from you? That is definitely... one full of joy and wonder. That's one thing that she said.
Yeah.
I got that from you, Mom.
Oh, so. I love that. And I want to talk a little bit about that later. Take me back to, it's been several years now, but your husband received a cancer diagnosis that was very unexpected.
Well, yes.
Right?
Yeah. Nobody wants that. Right?
Yeah. No, for sure. For sure. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I've heard Ellie talk about, either in me interviewing her or maybe reading something else, but was the way that probably led by you, but that your family, the way that they faced that trial, inspired her so much. And I wanted to read a quote, but first I'm going to look for this because I have it on my phone. Uh-huh. But first I want you to tell me the story about the song that she wrote and came and sang at the hospital.
When we got the diagnosis and I was telling the kids, you know, this is what's going on. And then I said, we're going to have a time of worship and prayer at our house. And at the time we were hosting this worship time with Anthony Skinner, who is a great artist, singer, songwriter. Mm-hmm. And we would just invite people, and people that we didn't even know would show up at our house, like 40 people. And just the most amazing worship time.
So this was before you guys were in this valley of dealing with breast cancer.
Okay. And so I just had this sense, when the presence of God is in a place, you know, he meets you there and places of a lot of pain and brings life and healing and hope. And so for me, that was a natural reach. You know, I was like, I got to get with him. I got to know. And I want people that I know and love around me. So this is what we're going to do. And Ellie was like, so we're having a worship time after Dad was diagnosed with cancer.
She thought the timing felt a little off.
That was unusual. And so when Anthony came and our son Ben also came to lead the worship, and the guys with Anthony who would always come and do that.
Is this at your house or at the hospital?
At our house.
Okay.
I told him about Brown, but we weren't telling many people. And so I said, I don't necessarily want to tell people that Brown was diagnosed with this, but we, you know, if you want to pray for people who are sick or pray for the new year, you know, he goes, oh, we're telling everyone. And I was like, oh, yeah. That feels kind of overwhelming. I'm like dealing with my own feelings about it, but he was very firm about it, and it turned out to be so sweet. Mm. And everybody came and laid hands on him and prayed for him. Our Papa Don Finto, who was our pastor at Belmont Church, he was there, and his wife Martha. And it was just a really powerful time. And Ellie said, I found myself being in the back of the room kind of going, what is this? To just like, yes, of course, you know, he inhabits the praise of his people. His presence is here. And Brown said it was so powerful to just be sitting there with his eyes closed, feeling all these hands on him, praying for him. But he said, I felt this little touch, and it just felt like electricity. It was so powerful. And he looked up, and it was Huck in Ellie's arms, had just reached out and touched him. It was so sweet.
Oh, wow. So the Huck is her youngest?
Her second.
Second. Okay, the middle. Uh-huh. Okay, the middle boy. Okay, okay. Uh-huh. Oh, how sweet.
It's very sweet.
She wrote, I want to read this out, but she wrote, I'll never forget watching my mom and dad run into that bleak and daunting and unknown journey ahead of them. I watched them run into the darkness with their hands raised in the air, just praising God. I felt like that was one of the most bizarre and natural responses, that diagnosis in that circumstance. But in the same breath, it felt irresistible. Just following them, it was like, I have to go follow them. Which you so beautifully told the story of. Yeah. I thought that was so neat. And then she also talked about, she came, I think maybe she was in the midst of recording an album, and she came and sang the song. I'm trying to think of the title of it.
Find You Here.
Find You Here. Yes. Actually sang it for her dad at the hospital. Yes.
And the night of the worship, she went home and somebody had given her music to write to, and she wrote the whole song.
Wow.
I never thought I'd find you here in the middle of our deepest fear, but you are drawing near. Mm. You're overwhelming us with peace. Mm. And so it was a real life experience.
Oh, I can only imagine.
And the kindness of God. Just, it's so challenging to watch people that you love suffer and to think about what, how that's going to unfold and to have the nearness of God. That is our good.
Right, right.
And so I just love that she was so honest about it. And then she, that's so Ellie though. She just flipped from what? Okay. To I'm writing this song.
Like, okay, I'm all in.
And when she played it for Brown in the hospital, he just tears. It was so powerful and sweet.
I can only imagine.
And I think it, you know, in turn, there's so many people who go through this. And I think that that has been probably surprise, like almost surprisingly to her.
Yeah.
Something that, you know, people reach out to her about. And then, you know, from that, I think, and from lots of things happening in her life, just the word is so pivotal to her.
What is it like for you as a mom to see the impact that her gifts of writing, her music, her songs has on other people?
I am just one of the fans, honestly. Like, I went to an event one time and a friend of mine was introducing me to somebody and they were, it was a lot of people there and they go, and you know Ellie Holcomb? And the girl was saying, oh yeah, I know Ellie. And my friend got distracted and went away. And the girl said, are you an Ellie Holcomb fan? And I go, yes. I just heard her new record on the way here.
It's so good.
I said, I'm such a fan. And then so she came back and she said, so you know that she's Ellie's mom. And she was like, no.
She didn't tell me that part. And
said, yeah, and I'm her mom. But I said, I'm such a fan.
Yeah. And I may have said this on the podcast before, but I think it's so interesting, like, somebody will say, you know, what's it like to stand there in the audience and watch him up on that stage? Right. Or I've had people even that I don't know just lean over and go, I can't imagine what that's like for you to watch him. But when he's, when Connor's on the stage performing, I'm just a fan.
Right.
Like I, it's almost like I'm watching, Connor thinks this sounds weird when I say it, but it's almost like I'm watching a different person.
It is.
Because he kind of steps into, you know, the guy on the stage with the great songs and all that. And he's so fun to watch. But I think I just turn into a fan as opposed to mom, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they're doing what they do and you get to experience that.
Yeah.
And just the way everybody else
just
around
the way,
you
yeah,
is.
Everyone. And it's just extra fun because you get to see everyone else experience it, which is probably my favorite part.
It is too
of all.
Sweet.
One of the things I think that really impresses me about Ellie, and this could totally be perception, so correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like Ellie's joy in motherhood and being a woman and just living life, that she doesn't hold too tightly to the music and her identity in it. Is that fair to say?
I think it's very fair.
And I would bet that that's a real challenge, because I'm not sure that a lot of artists could say that, because the music is, their career seems the overriding, you know, priority in life.
Right.
But it's almost like that's a bonus and she loves it. She does it with so much fun and exudes so much passion when she's doing it.
I think that's true. And I think her management has been great at encouraging her to be the, you know, to be present in her work the way she is in life, just celebrating. And she was asked to write a children's book.
Yes.
And so that was, that was not something she thought about doing. And then, you know, doing that was so fulfilling to her.
Yeah. And the devotion, Fighting Words,
right.
I would definitely give a big plug for. Yes. If you need daily encouragement, Ellie's devotion book is so good. It's called Fighting Words.
I agree.
Yeah. So good. I'm
such
sure.
A shameless fan.
No, you should be. Yeah. I can't imagine any being any other way. That's for sure. Just think advice wise, like you've raised five kids, they're so close. Your family is Christ focused. And I mean, I see exactly now where Ellie gets this joy and everything from. But what is your advice when it comes to the moms out there that are still in the daily grind, kids at home and doing the best they can, but really wanting to point them to Jesus?
That is a great question. I'm trying to decide if I'm going to tell this story.
Oh, I think you are.
Okay. I think I need to. I think it's really good. Ellie one time called Brown and said, Dad, Mom wants the boys to know Jesus so bad she's cramming them down their throats. And that was really hard for me to hear. And it was really true. And I think that it is hard having been transformed and having had that to hold on to and it making such a difference for me. Wanting that for your kids can be almost like a driving force. And I think that what's so great about God is he loves us who we are, where we are. And I think that sometimes it doesn't feel like that if your parent is like, you need Jesus,
yeah,
you know. And so I learned the hard way that, you know, everybody's journey is different, and everybody may, even if they believe sort of like you believe, it may look different. And just learning to love my kids the way God loves them mm-hmm. is just the best way to go.
Yeah.
It really is.
And a challenge. For it sure. Is. Yeah.
But it's so, in a way, it's like a release because it's not my job. You know, it is my job because I'm their mother, and just living my life honestly in front of them, I think is what they really need.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need me to beat them over the head with a Bible. And it's not that I necessarily did that, but I do think I was just always talking about it, always just do this, you know, and I think that I regret that. And just accepting people where they are.
And it is so hard to step back, though, and say our job is just to plant the seeds,
right.
be the example, right. and then, you know, let God do his thing in yes. his timing with them. But it can be a challenge. Yeah.
Yes. Be teachable. And let the ones that don't necessarily concur with everything that you believe. On Mother's Day, one of my kids said, what's the most surprising thing about being a mom right now? And I said, honestly, it is how much I have to learn from you. Mm. I always thought, oh, as a mom, I need to teach you things and the secrets of life or whatever.
Yeah.
And just talking to them and learning from them, you know, just, I mean, honestly, one of my kids was like, sometimes Christians just come across arrogantly and they're like, oh, I'll pray for you. And I'm like, but they will, they love you. They're going to pray for you. And he said, yeah, but you know, you don't think how that's coming across to somebody who isn't maybe on that, in that place spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
And it can come across like, you poor lost soul, you know.
Yeah.
It doesn't come across the way God comes across, if you think about it. And so, you know, he just was like, oh, I'm looking for people who are looking for something.
Yeah.
I'm looking for the sick, not the people who think they know it all and they have it all together.
Mm-hmm. So true. Yeah.
Right.
That's really good.
It
yeah.
is so
and
good.
I would say that too, that's definitely been a surprising part of this stage of parenting with adult children.
Right.
Is what you learn from your kids.
Yes.
And that what you see, how, when you see them growing
right.
and inspires my own faith, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. That's, yeah. I think, been a surprise of, because you do, you think you're the teacher, you know,
right.
you're the one who's supposed to be teaching them. Okay. So this was the question that you were dreading because, thank goodness Debbie listens to the podcast.
Yes,
she's heard some
it's
episodes.
So good. I enjoy it so much.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. We'll use Ellie in this circumstance. Five would take all day, right? Five
right.
kids.
Right.
But what Ellie got from her mom, and you said that question made you a little nervous because you can't easily
right.
say what it is. And I love that you talked to Brown about it.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know. I feel like she came out of the womb, like being herself, you know? And so he said, well, I know she'd say a lot of things, you know, I'm going to ask her. And so she wrote this sweetest, it was amazing, made me cry.
Oh, I
made
can
Brown
only
cry.
Imagine.
So, so sweet.
Well, I love that question allowed you to have a really special moment with Ellie. Yeah.
That's what I was saying to you. I was like, I think that every dad should go to their kids and ask, what do you think you've learned? What part of you that you like? Do you think you got from your mom?
Yeah. And I'd love for listeners to actually do that and let us know what they hear back.
Absolutely.
Because I think that would be a really neat experiment for them to know. And what a gift
so
to
too.
Give your wife or, you know, the mom and the
right.
family to know what their kids would say when someone else asked them. Will you tell me just a little bit of what Ellie said about her mom?
Well, she said, you're full of joy and wonder. And, she also said, every person in front of you is important and deserves your attention and your love. And she said, you know, she said lots of other things that were really fun and sweet. I think having lost my mom and being kind of like surprised by her, and I felt like it was an untimely death.
Mm-hmm.
And the mourning that I felt, the loss of my mother, because I didn't have a chance True. I think for us, moms are just there for us, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you're here to make me feel better, to help things go better, you know, and I don't think that we often think about how much they impact our lives. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I had such a deep sense of loss because I don't feel like I really was able to tell her all the things that she gave to me and the beautiful ways that she, you know, helped me live my life in ways that were meaningful and just how much I respected and admired her.
Right.
And so it was such a great gift. Good job.
Good job. I love that. It was so sweet and definitely. And it's so interesting when you came in the door at my house and Cooper, my son, was finishing setting up, you do exactly what Ellie just said. You make everybody feel important because you talk to him just like you talk to me. And, you know, what did you do in high school and where did you go to college? You know, you took an interest when, you know, you didn't necessarily have to do that. And that is a very special quality. But I have so enjoyed talking to you today.
I have enjoyed it.
I feel like
well.
I could
Thank
have gone
so
on and
much.
On. Thank you.
Bye.
Hey, if you made it this far, that means you were able to soak up all the wisdom from Debbie. Good for you. This is one of my favorite interviews I've shared. Guess what? Our next episode is with Drew's mom, Nancy, and let me tell you, she is just as delightful. Hey, don't forget, you can watch these interviews if you prefer on YouTube, and of course, be sure to follow us on the Got It From My Mama Instagram page. See you back here next week.